This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome, Joy 94.9. This is Hear Me Raw, our first female current affairs show. Tonight we're looking at breast cancer. Many of us have been touched by cancer. Cancer crosses all boundaries. It occurs in all age groups, sexualities, religions and cultures. There are more than 12,000 new cases of cancer diagnosed each year in Australia. And today we'll be looking at the most forms of cancer, but in particular, we're going to be discussing in depth breast cancer. Breast cancer affects us all. If not at a personal physical level, it affects the women within our lives, our mothers, our sisters, our partners, our friends and our daughters. Today in the studio we have Alison Pipers, Deputy Director of the Cancer Prevention Centre here at Cancer Council Victoria, and Judy Summitt, a 69-year-old, is that okay to say that?
Oh, yes,
I've done it now.
I can cope with that.
Breast cancer survivor. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Hi.
It's lovely to have you in our very first show.
Yes, we're very privileged, actually.
It's very exciting.
quite proud to be here.
Yes.
Well, I think it's very important that we tackle the issues, you know, central to women. So we're going to go straight into it. Now, what does the Cancer Council Victoria do?
Oh, we do a lot of things, and they're all around fighting cancer, so really trying to fight cancer on every level. I'm sure many of your listeners will have heard of the Cancer Council. They may not know that we're an independent charity, so that's probably quite an important point to make. Most of the work that we do is around kind of four areas. So one is the research that we fund. So we're really trying to find a cure for cancer, improve treatments, a whole range of different things. So research is a big part of it. We do a lot in relation to prevention and early detection, and that's the area that I work in, and we'll talk a bit more about that in relation to breast cancer as we go through. And we also do a lot of things in trying to support people who are going through the cancer journey, and that's where Judy comes in, and we can talk a bit more about that later. And probably the fourth dimension is our work around advocacy, so trying to change policy and government practice so that things are better in relation to cancer.
Is the Cancer Council of Victoria government subsidised, or is it a completely donations based?
We are we're a bit of both, really. We are independent of government, which is good because we like to be at an arm's length. We can rattle the cage a bit further, a bit more from that perspective. But we do run some programs that receive government funding. So Pap Screen, for example, is funded by the state government, and that's all the communications and recruitment for Pap Screen is run through the Cancer Council. So we do get grants in for different things, but the majority of our money comes from the Victorian purse.
It's strange that you still have to rattle the cage. It's such a prominent issue in our society, and you're having to stand up and roar.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably less so now in relation to breast cancer because it has such a huge public profile, and the women who've gone before us have rattled the cage and have made sure that the situation for breast cancer is a lot better now than it used to be. But some of our other cancers, we're still trying to draw attention to the government's attention to improve conditions and screening programs and those sorts of things.
Judy, what is your role there at the moment? Before we get into your story, can you just tell us a bit what you do there at the moment?
Well, I'm known as a Cancer Connect volunteer, and I'm linked with women who are experiencing breast cancer and who want to just talk to somebody else who's been through it. And, of course, I've been through it. I was diagnosed 17 years ago. And, you know, women just want to know. They need to feel comfortable talking to somebody who's been through all that.
Absolutely. I think it's so important that we can relate as women and share that information. That's the base of what we do, isn't it, as women?
Mm. Yes. Exactly.
We share what we know and we support other women in the same plight, shall we say?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Thanks for listening to Hear Me Raw on Joy 94.9. We've got some messages through.
Yeah, we have, Sue. We're very excited today. Nicola's going to help me Scroll through the SMS. Here we go. We've been talking current affairs and we've got a message in from Grant. He says in relation to the Pinkalicious decision or the VCAT decision to for them to legally ban men from their events, he says, I think men only or women only events and clubs are fine. We do have to be careful that we don't end up with every club becoming one or the other. But having a few targeted events is good. We have clubs. Why can't we have men or women only? And that's from Grant. Thank you very much. And also, this is from Lonnie X, or Lonnie with a kiss maybe, saying we still need to fight. This is in relation to our chat about Stonewall and the 40th anniversary. And she's saying joy is an excellent vessel to fight. This show is fabulous. You Lesbies rock. Well, thanks, Lonnie. We think you rock too. So everybody can SMS or email us and let us know what you think of the show.
Thank you very much, Lonnie. We had some good responses already. Let's go into surviving breast cancer. Now, you were diagnosed, you said, 17 years ago.
17 years in October.
What led up to that? Did you have pain? Can we go through that part of your story?
I'd been experiencing cysts over a number of years in my breasts. And so I was having regular mammograms, which was sort of fairly unusual back then. And one of my tests that I'd had, it was discovered that I had what appeared to be something sinister, as they described it back then. That was what occurred in the mammogram. So I then had to have biopsy to activate it, and to action it to see whether it was or not, and it certainly was cancerous.
And then how did you cope with the news? Because obviously something like that is, we do call it the big C. Did you have a lot of trouble coping with the idea that, this was a very serious illness?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, obviously, I think everybody would have the same reaction is when you hear the word cancer, you immediately think death. You're equated. Mm-hmm. But it's an awful diagnosis, but it's not always a death sentence. Because, as I said, 17 years and I've been cancer-free for the last 15 anyway. Were you going to ask?
That's okay. 17 years ago, I'm assuming that medical research and the treatments would have been a little bit different to they are now?
Treatments have varied, yes. As they varied from when I was diagnosed 17 years ago, because 17 years prior to that, the treatments back then were radical. They were just, some of the radiotherapy and the heavy doses of radiotherapy and chemotherapy really were devastating for women's bodies. But then, of course, again, they've changed the way they do a lot of the radio and chemotherapy treatments.
I think one of the things with the improvements with treatment is that we're much better now at tailoring treatment to the individual woman with her breast cancer. So we can tell at a cellular level a lot more about that particular cancer that she has and really try and hone in on a treatment that's going to give her the very best chance of survival.
Because I would imagine, this is a question to both of you, that back 17 years ago when you said, obviously the treatment was a lot harsher, the drugs were more powerful, but also prevention wouldn't have been as big a priority at that stage. Was there, do you think things would have been different for a lot of women back then if we knew what we knew today?
I think so. And one of the big differences we've had in that time is the introduction of breast screen, which started, I think, 1991.
Yep.
So that's about then.
And what is that? Is that a program or is that a...
So that's the national screening program that we have in Australia. So Breast Screen provides a free service. It targets women aged 50 to 69 and provides free mammograms for women in that age group. In fact, women who are 40 are welcome to go along as well, women in their 40s, but they won't be actively re-invited to attend. But from 50, women will get an invitation in the mail to go along to Breast Screen. They just need to ring a central number, make an appointment for a time that suits them, and they will have two x-rays done of each breast in a view to try and find out whether or not there might be a cancer growing that you wouldn't even know was there. So they're very good, these x-rays, at finding something that you couldn't actually feel as a lump in your breast.
quite often, I know we do joke about it a bit, but the squishing of the boobs in the mammogram, yeah. And you have all these comic cartoon strips with the very flat breasts where you can leave your beers on afterwards.
Yeah, yes. And like,
it's quite true, really.
Yeah. And I have had it done. Actually, have you had it done?
Well, I am 36, and so I'm not actually, in that bracket, which is, it raises a really interesting point, because I know you said that this screening program is targeted at women plus 50, but we obviously know of a lot of women who develop breast cancer in their early 20s. So how, in that instance, how are we, to our younger listeners, what sort of strategies should they be looking at, rather, because mammogram doesn't seem to be on the agenda?
Yeah, look, it's a really challenging one. Breast cancer does occur at all ages. We see a lot in the media of around stories of young women. They tend to be the ones that that get the media headlines. And certainly we've had some very high-profile celebrities who've been diagnosed. Still, though, the majority of breast cancers occur in older women. So, in fact, 75% of our breast cancers occur in women aged over 50. So it is typically a disease of that occurs more as we age. That's not to say it doesn't occur in younger women. Now, screening is pitched at the over 50s and therefore over 40s, as I said, but it's not actually appropriate for younger women. And one of the reasons with that is just the way our breasts are made up. So when we're younger, we've got a lot of glandular tissue in our breasts. And
which is the lumps that you can feel if you're...
Well, yeah, sometimes it comes across as quite, yeah, bubbly, yeah, and they change a bit sometimes throughout the month. But that glandular tissue, which is kind of there, I suppose, with the lobes and the ducts, and it's there sort of during those childbearing years. If you do a mammogram of a young woman's breast, it looks very foggy on the X-ray field. It's like a bit of a snowstorm, and it's very difficult to read to see if there is some sort of sinister lesion or lump growing there. As we age, our breasts become more fatty, and that glandular tissue sort of gets replaced by fat. And they droop, and all those sorts of things happen. Yeah, yeah. But as we age, if you take a mammogram of a woman who's older, it's much clearer to read, and you can really find things that might be growing there. So that's one of the reasons that, unfortunately, the screening program isn't appropriate for young women. So that's where we have the message around being breast aware. So we encourage women to be familiar with the normal look and feel of their breasts, and to keep an eye out for unusual changes, and go and see their doctor if they find anything.
I must say that's a good thing about being a lesbian.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of nodding going on in the studio, and I guess that's for us too, and for our listeners in particular, that would be a handy thing for our partners if we were coupled up to know as well, not just for, you know, use them for pleasure toys, but also to be aware, as I think we would all remember that's how the character Dana from The L Word was diagnosed, because her girlfriend found the lump. So that's so self-examination is a big ticket for younger people.
Yeah, and we've shifted a little bit in the messages over the years around that as well. We used to promote monthly breast self-examination, or BSE, and now we're much more kind of, I suppose, fluid with the messages, in that we're saying to people, become familiar, do it in a way that works for you. It doesn't necessarily have to be every month, just get into a pattern for that, and to look out for unusual changes. And there's a few things that women should keep an eye out for. Obviously, a lump that wasn't there before is something that you should see your doctor about. But there are other changes like just sort of areas that might feel a bit different. If your nipple goes inverted and it hasn't already been like that, that could be an unusual change. Mm. Sometimes women get pain. Now, a lot of women get pain throughout their menstrual cycle on a regular basis, but unusual pain that can't be explained by that. Changes to the skin, dimpling. Mm-hmm. Some people have like an orange peel kind of effect. They could all be signs that there is a breast cancer growing within the breast. Usually, it's not. Usually, 9 out of 10 times, it turns out that that's a very common benign change to the breast. But if it happens to be a breast cancer, we want to try and find it early, because then we'll have the best chance of treatment.
I'm actually resisting the urge to pull out my breasts now and have a good look, yeah. especially while I've got people in. But I actually want to include men in this conversation. Yeah. Now, men are known to have breast cancer. Now, when I was doing the research, I actually didn't realise this. Did you realise this, Kathy?
Yeah, look, it's on the back end of my brain. But you're right. They men do have man
breasts.
Boobs.
Yes, they do.
Moobies, if you like.
Moobies.
We can be so colloquial.
Could you explain a bit more about that? But the numbers?
Yeah, look, the numbers are low, but it does occur. And I think for men who do get breast cancer, it must be very isolating because, many people don't even realise it is a disease that can affect men. If you look at the Australian statistics, we have about 12,000 people diagnosed with breast cancer every year, and we have about 2,700 women who die of breast cancer every year. We have about 10 men across the whole Australia who die each year, and probably about 20, 25 men who are diagnosed. So they're small numbers in comparison, but, you know, to an individual, it's just as devastating a diagnosis, of course.
That's phenomenal. You're listening to Joy 94.9. This is Hear Me Roar.
You want choice? You've got it. Joy.
Thanks for listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. We're here with Alison and Judy and we're talking boobs and we're quite excited.
Yeah, it's a very serious issue, but we're getting into the issue of breast cancer now. Judy, you've been telling us about your story. You were diagnosed with breast cancer 17 years ago. Obviously, you beat the disease, and now you're actually working with the council as a lifeline helper, sort of.
Can you tell us
a little bit about that? Because I would imagine that when you were going through this, you would have needed a lot of support, not only from your friends and family, but also from healthcare practitioners who would, you know, give you the motivation to sort of fight it off.
Yes, I certainly did need the support from my family and friends, and I got it in bucket loads, which was great. I don't know whether you really want to know, but I'll tell you briefly.
I want to know everything.
Yep.
I was diagnosed, as I said, 17 years ago on the day that my partner of 15 years died.
After
his funeral, I had to wait until then to have a biopsy. So the biopsy was done, and the only day that the surgeon could operate, because it was in October when I was diagnosed, I said, the only day that the surgeon could operate was on Cup Day. And that was the year that I was to be wined and dined at a women's magazine marquee at the races. And I was not a happy girl, I've got to tell you. But I said to the surgeon, what I really need is for you to do the surgery so that I can see the cup. I want to be out of the anaesthetic so I can see the cup, all right? So he did that. He was very good. And I sat up there, and the only consolation that I was in pain and agony, and I watched the race. But the only consolation I had was that it was the year that it bucketed down rain, and everybody in their finery was covered in mud and slush, and it was, and you could barely see the horses. It was so wet. Then 3 days later, my father died. Oh. So I sort of had a pretty rough month, you might say, thereabouts, because it was all happened within 3.5 weeks. So, yes, I needed a lot of support then. Fortunately, I had three glorious sons who were all at university at the time. And if it hadn't been for them and my various friends, my next-door neighbour who'd had breast cancer 2 years before me, so I had her as the, you know, the experienced person to sort of stand by me and come to appointments, medical appointments. And then I had the sons who, well, we all cried a lot together, needless to say. And they had to take up the looking after me. They were very helpful. They were really good. They were always good guys. But they had to do all the, you know, the housework and the cleaning and the cooking and the shopping and still go to uni.
I actually want to get into how you got to that point. When you were diagnosed and you had your surgery, very, very importantly about Cup Day, What treatment did you have? Could you tell us a bit more about that? What were the medical interventions that you had?
The surgery?
Yes.
Well, I had a mastectomy with a saline implant at the same time, to reconstruct at the same time. And so that's what they do, is they put an expander in. When they've done the mastectomy, they basically sort of, I won't go into all the gory details, mm-hmm. but they basically scoop it out and the internal bits out. And then they install an expander. And then over a period of time, they fill that expander slowly to stretch the tissue in order for it to then accept the permanent implant. But what happened with me was that infection set in, and I had the expander had to be removed. In fact, it didn't have to be removed. It actually ruptured the suture line. So I was in a lot of trouble. I'll try to make it as gentle as possible because I can see somebody squirming in their seat over there.
I still want to pull out my breast.
So what happened was that the expander had to come out, and it had to heal from the inside out. So I had to dress that myself on a couple of times a day with, you know, sterile dressings. And it took from November through to the end of March before it healed. And by that time, I still had this awful mess there, and I had to go and see a plastic surgeon. So I interviewed three. One of them took one look at me and said, I can't do it. I couldn't touch you because it's too, you know, too messy. And it's beyond me. And the other two, well, one of them was a professor who had was training other surgeons to do the particular surgery, which was using the rectus muscle. The rectus muscle, you know, the six-pack muscles.
Your Pilates muscle.
Your six-pack muscle, yep. You know, when you develop those. It's the rectus muscle. You may have heard of something called the tram flap reconstruction. So they use that muscle to reconstruct a breast. So I had that done, and infection set in that as well. Obviously, my body doesn't like being attacked with a scalpel.
Obviously.
Yes. And what happened there? Oh, that's right. So I had to go back into hospital and have all that drained and all sorts of terrible things with that. And I was sitting up in hospital waiting for one of my sons to come and pick me up and take me home. And I put my hand just on the right breast and I felt a lump on that side. So I was back in hospital less than a month later and had the other breast removed. So over a period of years, the left breast has now sort of, well, it sort of atrophied and did all sorts of terrible things. And about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I had it removed completely. So I'm now bilateral mastectomy. So, and I wear breast forms now, or prostheses, you've probably heard. I don't use the word prosthesis because you end up spitting when you say it.
Look, it's
hard to get around it, you know.
It's obviously an incredibly emotional experience having to go through something like this and remove a part of your body, which is inherently something that makes you a woman. And we've seen high-profile cases of this. Christine Applegate recently, a celebrity in the US, chose to remove hers, you know, to prevent breast cancer. So, I mean, how did you cope with this emotionally? Because that really is every woman's worst nightmare with breast cancer, having to take a breast off.
The self-esteem and that whole loss of what appears to be, you know, the womanliness. And it's just, it's devastating. And a lot of women don't even get over it. I finally, after all these years, I can walk around, and I did for about 2 or 3 years without wearing any breast forms at all, because I'm quite happy being flat-chested. That's right, that French look. It was really quite fashionable, really. I found that too with the Encore program, which is a floor and pool program. And with the women, a lot of women, when they'd ring up and want to be involved in the program, but they'd say, but I'm not going in the pool.
It's a little bit too revealing or too.
But the thing is, with that particular program, we usually tried to get, and most of the time we did, we would get the privacy of the pool, so that the women, we only had the on-call women, the women with breast cancer in the pool, and nobody else was there. So they started to feel a bit more comfortable about all that. But many of them still have problems with that self-esteem.
It must be an amazing journey. Alison, is this a common theme amongst the women? You must meet a lot of women going through this process. Is your story...
Of course. And every woman has a different story, and every woman's treatment is different. Her diagnosis and the amount of support she gets from her own circles is always different. And I think that's why it's fantastic that we've got these programs now and volunteers such as Judy who can really guide someone through that journey. And with the Cancer Connect program that Judy's involved in, we really try and match women up to someone who might be at a similar stage of life, a similar setup at home, that sort of thing, or have had a similar treatment and diagnosis program, and they can really just be a sounding board, a shoulder to cry on, a friend, all those sorts of things. I'm probably taking your words away from you, Judy, but I really do think that it's great that we can offer that sort of service now through the volunteering of people who've gone through the journey such as you.
Well, it's very rewarding because I would say probably all the phone calls that I have had over the years, by the time we've got, I mean, I could be talking on the phone for an hour. A lot of the calls are that length. But invariably, the women at the end of it will say, I am so glad I've had someone like you to talk to. I feel so much better. You know, all these very positive comments, because they just feel as if they can't always say some of the things to their family that they would feel and they would like. And it's just, you know, it's
well,
very comforting.
Well, definitely. Personal experience would definitely be a bonus in this situation. We've had a call in from someone to say that she's it's ironic that she should be listening tonight because her second mother, or the woman who's as good as, was diagnosed just yesterday with cancer. She said it was tiny and only spotted with the mammogram. Thinks we're doing a fabulous job on the show, and also you guys are obviously doing a fabulous job. And she does ask whether or not there's any help available in country areas.
Yeah, and it's great that she's set that call in to sort of highlight that, because for women in rural areas, it is difficult. I mean, the Cancer Council provides support on a range of different levels. So we have our Cancer Connect program, which is great for rural areas, you know, telephone, that sort of thing. We also have our Cancer Helpline, and it might be a good one for that caller to know about. The number's 13 11 20, and I'll repeat that later, and be great if you all could as well. But that's the key number for the Cancer Council, for our helpline. Now, it's staffed by cancer nurses. So these are nurses who have worked on cancer wards. They've trained particularly in cancer. They know about oncology and all that kind of stuff, and they are counsellors as well. So when people call, and it might be a cancer patient, it might be their daughter, their friend, their next door neighbour, they're there to really provide information and support, and they're tapped into databases. They can let people know about support groups. So for some people, getting together with a group of people face to face is a really good way to get some support. We also have online chat rooms, which we're doing a trial at the moment for people with advanced cancer. So as you can imagine, that's even a harder group to get together and support, particularly if they're all around Victoria. But the chat lines are a fantastic opportunity now for those people who might be facing sort of later stage diagnosis.
And that's a great way for women to share, isn't it? I mean, it's such a basic thing. The new technology, and we're using it to empower each other. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Can I just ask, sort of taking a step back a bit, we talked about the medical intervention that you did. What about alternative therapies? A lot of women now don't necessarily want to do the high-level medical interventions, or perhaps they have to, but, you know, they're making greater choices. Can they work together, the alternative, or do some people actually say, look, I actually don't want that medical, I want to do alternative, and what are they?
Well, it all gets down to individual choice, really, and it is a difficult area. The Cancer Council is an evidence-based organisation, so we are quite focused on talking to people about treatment and options for which we know there's good evidence that benefit can be gained. Now, that's not to say that things such as massage, relaxation therapies, a whole range of things can give people great support and respite. But I would put the call that I would tell people to be a little bit wary of some alternative treatments that make great big claims about savior and cure and those sorts of things if they don't have evidence to back that up.
Complementary therapies is what we're talking about with shiatsu and massage and Reiki and all that sort of thing. Well, I did all of that because that made me feel good.
Yeah.
Well, it's a feel-good thing. It's not working on chemicals and, you know, you're talking about something, something different to drugs and radiotherapy and chemotherapy, you know. Because when you talk about alternatives, I think of, you know, coffee enemas or something.
Something a little bit off.
So I talk, complementary therapies are the feel-good things, the massages and the touchy-feely things that make you feel good and enhance your immune system because you're feeling joyous and happy and, you know, smelling flowers or whatever it might be. But alternative stuff is...
It's kind of promoting a healthier lifestyle too, isn't it? So cutting out your bad foods and, you know, and doing things, reducing the stress in your life, which is, we know, can be a cancer inducer in a lot of ways. So.
Yeah. And an important point though too is if you are considering taking different sorts of herbs or treatments and that sort of thing, tell your treating physician, so your GP or your oncologist, because in some cases some things can actually interact with, say, chemotherapy. So like high doses of vitamin C can sometimes be a bad mix when it comes to some sorts of chemotherapy. It's about being as honest as you can with your treating physician so everyone knows the full picture, because everyone's just trying to get your health better, and holistically is a great thing by getting into other things like the relaxation and the other therapies as well.
We have terrible news though. It's the end. We actually have to. I know, doesn't that go so quickly?
Yes,
it's fine.
Before we round up, we really do want to thank you. Have you got just a couple of words of advice, anything that you'd actually like to say before we go?
I'd just like to say to every woman that's out there that is experiencing breast cancer, they are not alone. Years ago, there was there wasn't the sort of resources. There is so much out there now to help women.
And I'd probably say around early detection. So I think that's a key message there. So encouraging women aged over 50 to screen, and if anyone notices an unusual change within their breast, going to see their doctor, because it is a disease that if we find it early, there is a great chance that we can treat it successfully.
Fantastic. And that helpline again is 131120. Now, just to sum it up, breast cancer is the most invasive form of cancer for women, and I'm hoping that tonight's discussion might inspire you to do a breast check. Maybe you'll make an appointment with a doctor. And if you're worried about breast changes, remember, we all need to talk. Talk to your friends, your family, whoever you can. You might want to contact the helpline. Remember, that's 131120 at the Cancer Council of Victoria. But whatever you do, don't do nothing. There is help out there.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.